So the first paper is by Rashmi Varna from WARC, Beyond the Politics of Representation, Tribal Art in Postcolonial India.
Okay, I'd like to begin by thanking Shireen for inviting me to participate in this amazing, inspiring workshop. I've been learning a lot since the morning. And the paper I'm presenting today is part of a book I'm writing, so it's very much work in progress. The book is called Modern Tribal, Representing Indigeneity in Postcolonial India. And this is a section on gold painting, on tribal painting that I'm presenting today. And in my sort of terror of time, I've been slashing away at my paper. So what I hope what I do present seems coherent enough. Okay, so I'm going to start my time. On 3rd July 2001, a small newspaper column in India reported that 39-year-old Jangar Singh Shyam had committed suicide in Japan. Jangar was a tribal or Adivasi artist who belonged to the Pardhan clan of the Gond tribe from central India, working on a contract at the privately owned Mithila Museum in Niigata, Japan, where he had been brought to produce a body of work for a monthly salary of about Rs. 12,000, approximately £150 today. Although not much is publicly known about the personal circumstances leading to his death, whether his suicide was the culmination of a nagging depression or loneliness in a foreign land, or an act of desperation, if not resistance, against the exploitative conditions of the globalized production of Adivasi art, his death was both a catastrophe and an opening. The demise of a brilliant young artist on the cusp of achieving global fame was tragic enough. But Jangar was also a mentor and breadwinner for numerous family and clan members whom he had brought along to the city to encourage them to become artists in their own right. Through his achievements and his personal charisma, he offered them glimpses of hope and success in the city, away from lives of poverty and despair in the village. Indeed, Jangar's rise to prominence from the jungles of central India, where he carried and sold wood to earn a living, to being discovered and brought to Bhopal, and that's in itself is a very interesting story as to how he was discovered by agents of the state, by artist, art critic, and patron Jagdish Swaminathan, when he was just 21 years of age, to becoming a celebrated indigenous painter whose work adorned state legislative buildings and went on to gain global currency in the international art market, was already spectacular and the stuff of fairy tale. But what was most remarkable, although not unheard of within the dynamics of a globalized art market, was that his death finally made his art worth accumulating for upper middle class art consumers in India and for those collecting and trading in indigenous art globally. Jangar's death then is an equal measure as fascinating a story as that of his art and of his life and career as an artist. I begin with it because it raises a set of issues that my paper and my larger project seek to explore. These concern, among others, the globalization of indigenous art production, the politics of the post-colonial state's relationship to tribal or Adivasi art, and the aesthetic challenges of interpreting Adivasi art in today's world. And I think it's the latter that I hope to focus on today. That is, how do we interpret this art? Like Jangar's death, responses to these issues are typically rendered in a tragic mode that mourns the evisceration of cultural authenticity against the onslaught of global capitalism. So, for instance, the writer Vagish Shukla writes quite bitterly and angrily about the predicament of Gond art in globalization. Quote, "The Pardhans have been forced by circumstances to sell their gods. Their oral traditions, their gods, are represented in paintings that are now displayed in art galleries and drawing rooms." While a central aim of my paper is to explore the politics surrounding the fate of Adivasi art in the modern world, a key argument concerns the ways in which the art itself offers an allegory, however partial and incomplete, of the process by which it enters the world and is both transformed by it and transforms it. In other words, I depart from accounts that see Adivasi or indigenous art as having been simply ravaged and desecrated by commercialization. Instead, I look at how the art itself exposes that process of commodification and accumulation on a global scale and offers resistance to it. Further, I seek to go beyond the politics of representation that has been the dominant framework for considering subaltern or peripheral art, which has tended to focus on representational violence, an uncovering of which holds the impossible promise of revealing the authentic subaltern. Instead of chasing after the ever illusory authentic subaltern representation, I attempt to hitch formal discussions of indigenous art both to forms of power within institutions from which it is often excluded, but also crucially in which it is selectively appropriated, as well as to the political and social processes in which it is embedded and of which it is a critique. In this, I found the concept of primitive accumulation as providing a very useful and suggestive framework and metaphor for a materialist consideration of this art today. The discussion on primitive accumulation in Marx and in the work of subsequent commentators as a double-edged idea that is historical as belonging to the prehistory of capitalism and logical as part of the process by which capitalist accumulation takes place also opens up ways to track the cultural economy of Adivasi art in post-colonial India. In turn, the politics of the accumulation of tribal or primitive art in India and its related commodification and consumption offers a critical perspective on Marx's discussion of primitive accumulation in the prehistory of capital, in which the producer is violently separated from the means of production and dispossessed from his or her land and labor from life itself. Primitive accumulation thus involves a coerced enclosure of the commons for the establishment of the rule of private property. In this, the centrality of a confrontation with colonialism must be registered, for of course colonialism constitutes a key moment in the violent history of enclosures in India and elsewhere. One can therefore extend Marx's economic concepts into the domain of indigenous art, where the primitive is both a metaphorical marker of the untamable savage to be ruled by colonial violence, what we can call primitive one, as well as constituting that which is before capital in a historical sense, primitive two. By critically assessing how primitive accumulation is not consigned to the prehistory of capital, but is in fact integral to the political economy of development in India, particularly as it pertains to tribal lands, resources, labor, culture, and life, we can begin to place the political meaning of the practice, circulation, and accumulation of Gond art in the context of larger political and economic processes shaping the world today. The doubled sense in which indigenous art, like indigenous knowledge, lands, and resources, is wrenched from its producers and forced into the capitalist process is very much central to my discussion below. Among others, David Harvey's account of primitive accumulation as an ongoing accumulation through dispossession offers a necessary and key rereading of primitive accumulation as an essential ingredient of the ongoing force of global capitalism. Now, new enclosures proliferate and colonize all kinds of commons, from land and water to knowledge and art, as ever new forms of economic crises of accumulation grip the world and threaten profit. Harvey's argument that capitalism creates an other that it can then violently subsume is particularly relevant for Adivasi art, as it struggles to find a place within established art institutions such as the museum and the global art market, while also standing out of place. Has it been 15 minutes? Right. While standing out of place within those institutions. Okay, so I will just skip actually to...
No, actually you have 10 minutes.
That's what
sorry.
I thought.
Sorry.
Okay. But let me skip to the paintings themselves. The story of Jangar and that of his art and his community is an archetypal story of dispossession. It is also a little known story. The Pardhan Gons of Central India were traditional singers, storytellers, and community priests who had the privileged role of invoking the Gon deity Baradev for the well-being of the community. Through their storytelling performances, they played the role of oral historians and keepers of the collective memory of the tribe. For their special talent, they were rewarded with the patronage of Gon households and rulers. But as British rule entrenched itself in the Indian heartland, the power of the Gon rulers declined, and the Pardhan Gons began to lose their economic lifeline and traditional support for their stories and songs. As the 20th century rolled along, the Pardhan Gons became landless farmers, wage laborers, casual workers in government-run drought relief schemes, and part of the urban poor. Far from being a story of development, this is one of immiseration and dispossession. Yet a state project devoted to accumulating its cultural capital by harnessing Adivasi culture propelled some of the Pardhan Gons into the by-lanes of Bhopal, the capital city of the state. The city is particularly unique in India in terms of the concentration of institutions and spaces devoted to the tribal arts found here. In one of the most interesting institutions in the city is the art center called Bharat Bhavan, which was established to spearhead the rejuvenation of tribal folk and contemporary visual and performing arts in the state. And I'll just show you this is a painting by Jangar Singh Shyam, the artist who committed suicide. The Bharat Bhavan is unusual in having opened its doors to Adivasi and folk art to be viewed seriously in a gallery format. So in one sense, this has been, the work of the center has been very unique and quite revolutionary, as opposed to the more standard Museum of Mankind, which has exhibitions of tribal and Adivasi habitat and objects, etc., in a natural surrounding. Okay. But any attempt to chronicle the history of Gond painting flies in the face of ideas of authenticity and tradition, notions that are typically at the center of discussions on indigeneity. As the first artist from his village, it is credited to Jangar that he translated the rich storehouse of the gods and goddesses, trees and plants, rivers and springs, maybe you can see his painting for a bit longer, from the music of the Bana to picturization. John Bowles argues that it is through the excitement and force of creativity that Jangar gave form and color to what was previously invisible. But even as Gond art draws upon traditional stories and songs based upon Adivasi mythology and remembered village landscapes, aspects that are considered to be vital to the continuing survival of Adivasi cultures against the onslaught of exploitative development, Gond painting is very much a constructed tradition. As the art historian Kavita Singh points out, Jangar was not a traditional artist. He was not born into a family of traditional artists. He was not, in fact, from a community that was meant to have artists at all. The primacy of the ever-vanishing village in the city as a source of memory and creative inspiration was underscored by Jangar in his conversation with the journalist Tully, who asked him if he, Jangar, had thought he would learn more about art by going to Bhopal. Jangar's firm answer to Tully was, "No, I don't take advice from any city artists. I also tell other tribals who come to Bhopal not to copy, but to do their own work. The point of going to the city is not to change your art, but to sell it." Perhaps the best record of these processes that I've been talking about can be found in the paintings themselves. And because of the shortage of time, I'm going to turn to the paintings themselves. And I will try and conclude with them there. This is a painting done by Jangar's nephew, Venkatraman Singh Shyam, who offers a critical tribute to his uncle in this painting entitled Eiffel Tower. This 2007 painting references Jangar's visit to Paris at the Magicien de la Terre exhibition at the Pompidou Center in 1989. The painting registers awe of Jangar's visit to Paris at a time when no Gond painter had been abroad, even as it depicts the ironies and absurdities of a tribal artist traveling in the West. the deliberate inversion of perspective in which Jhangar looms over the Eiffel Tower that is represented as a bird presents a cautionary tale of an exemplary Gond artist's meteoric rise to prominence. Caught on the zoomorphic figure's tail and swinging by his arm are the other Gond artists who were to benefit from his success. Jhangar's two hands tellingly hold a paintbrush and money respectively, both necessary for an artist's survival. And just below the Eiffel Tower in the foreground are eyes watching his every move. This is a painting that condenses all of the contradictions that animate the entering of Gond art on the world stage. The steep rise to world fame also bears within it the potential of a steep fall. The juxtaposition of an indigenized, zoomorphic figure in a domesticated foreign capital, Paris, with the material force of money and the conversion of art as object of exchange, the use of the traditional but innovative brush strokes with the modernist sensibility that movingly depicts the precarity of human success and achievement. In contrasting style, there is Durga Bai's rendering of Jhangar's story in a painting she did in 2009. Durga Bai is the leading woman Gond artist who is also related to Jhangar. In Durga Bai's painting here, the scene is local, set in Jhangar's village of Patangarh in the Narmada Valley. Here, Jhangar is just another village figure. Combining the full resources of Gond storytelling and its narrative techniques, and her own individual style of composition that includes designs borrowed from everyday objects, and her bold use of color, Durga Bai tells the story of Jhangar's work and art in the village. His discovery by Swaminathan is referenced to the image of the car and the road and the bearded figure. While Jhangar is not depicted as leaving the village for the city, the larger social narrative within which this painting is embedded would suggest so. Looking further in, what is striking is Durga Bai's use of Jhangar's painting of the popular Hindu deity Hanuman within her own canvas, a veritable artistic sleight of hand that enables Durga Bai to appropriate the great master. More poignantly, the seemingly placid surface of the painting, depicting the rhythm of everyday life in the village, is at its core in its details, also the hard labor of Jhangar's time in the village, carrying loads, working on the field, cow herding, chopping wood, fishing. It is relentless, continuous labor. The absolute materiality of the painting thus emerges in its representation of back-breaking labor in juxtaposition with the labor of art, both Jhangar's and her own, and the endless possibilities of its appropriation, accumulation, and dispossession within the capitalist world in which Durga Bai must live and survive after Jhangar. Do I have time for a concluding
paragraph?
Okay. There is a melancholic structure of feeling in Gond art, radiating from the beautiful pictures of trees inhabited by magical creatures and of peacocks dancing in the rain is a feeling of loss that emerges not only from the destruction and enclosings of forests and livelihoods, but also of culture and of ways of being. This feeling of loss is only magnified by the distance experienced by the typically urban and cosmopolitan viewer of these paintings from the artist, and the artist's own distance from his or her subject matter. Alongside a tenuous joy of something new, this art form, having been founded on the ruins of the past, historical memory for the Pardhan Gond artists lives through the materials of modernity and development, the acrylic paints and the canvases, whose quality varies according to what the artists can afford at a given point in time. It is the work of the Gond artists themselves then, and their ability to transform a world of deprivation into a work of memory and possibilities, as seen in the paintings by Venkat and Durga Bai, that offers both a critique of neoliberal globalization in which the Indian state is embedded and resistance to it. Thus, even as we might intellectually apprehend the impossibility of the purity of art, tradition, identity, the imbrication of Adivasi art in the circuits of global capital merits an account that renders the framework of the politics of representation that privileges questions of identity and authenticity as no longer adequate to this art. For it is within these circuits of primitive accumulation as ongoing dispossession that Jhangar succeeded in carving out an aesthetic space for himself and the artists who have followed him, a space that is at once both of maneuver and critique.
Thank you.